Welcome to Know the Name, Know the Answers. This has been a very interesting month, let alone an interesting day. I'm sure you all have stories to tell from everybody I know. We all have stories of challenges this month that are just incredible. And, of course, you all know about the tree hitting my, the lightning hitting the tree that hit my house and what I've been going through. Almost done, not quite. Anyway, I happen to have a very cherished friend at my house right now who is so incredibly talented. I literally just drug her up to this wonderful studio workroom of mine and said, you're my guest tonight. Wait till you see what Pat Robertson Rice can do. I mean, she is just incredible, amazing. I'm so blessed to have her in my life. You guys know what I mean. Once you get to talk with her, she works a little differently than some of the psychics and others I've had on here. Sure, she has to reword things and make sure she's getting it right and everything. And if you need to write, I've got paper. Okay, so you can call in and get your questions answered. And I want to just tell you a little story about her while you're getting deciding to call in. And the most interesting thing is I heard about all these different people, okay? An incredible number of different people. While I lived in China, I was hearing about people in the United States. And because in China, everything was so much less expensive than what it's here in the United States, I was able to explore just about anybody I heard about. I was able to literally say, okay, I'm going to have a session with them. So one of the people I called at that time when I lived in China, and this was during the school year of 2008-2009, one of the people I called was Pat Robertson Rice that I've got with us tonight. And she gave me this incredible reading, what years, what was going to happen and whatnot. And I thought, I am so impressed. This lady's outstanding. And then I said, I've got some questions. And every answer she gave me for my questions, I thought, this is loony bin. She can do this other stuff really well, but she just can't answer questions. That was my thought, okay? I'm so ready to admit when I'm wrong. So it was almost a year later when I had moved back to the United States and I was going through my notes on different readings and I found the tape of her reading and I thought, okay, I'm clearing things out. Let me just listen to this again. Did you know that 100% of what she told me had come true, even though at the time she told me, I thought, loony bin? But 100%. And I was amazed. Anyway, she is absolutely remarkable. And I'm so excited that I could grab her at this last minute and bring her forward for you guys. So welcome, Pat, to Know the Name, Know the Answers.
Thank you for having me on such short notice here tonight.
Well, thanks for being flexible.
And I say that when someone calls in, both of us will help them. How about that?
Okay, that works. So tell us how you got started. How did this gift come to you? Did you always have it? Did it come later? You know?
Well, the truth of it is, when I was a child, I was very connected. You know, I would play, now I know it was an angel, but, you know, I had these imaginary friends and I would tell my mother, you're going to get a letter tomorrow and it's going to make you sad. I didn't know it was a gift. I didn't know anything, you know, about it. But looking back early on, I was very connected. But as I went to school, you know, you just lose it. You're very busy. Once I got in elementary school, nobody else played with imaginary friends. So I didn't turn back to it until I was retired, basically, until my father died. And that's when it all started coming back.
Was it from a desire that you wanted to still contact your dad?
Yes, he died unexpectedly. And I was you love your parents. And he had asked if he could move up with us. And we were building an addition on our home. And he died. So there were words we never said goodbye. We never said anything. And so I was just so sad. And I kept praying every night. I said, well, somebody let me know that my dad's okay. Because like I said, we did not expect him and to die. So one night he appeared in my room at night, you know, when I was asleep, and woke me up. And he just said, I came because they said you had, you know, been praying to find out how I'm doing, and I'm fine. You know, so it was just one of those things. And in the course of it, he said, you're not doing what you came here to do. And I said, for God's sake, I said, I'm married. I got two kids. I'm a high school English teacher. I work for the community. What else do you want me to do? And he said, no, you're supposed to help people with their spiritual lives. And I said, I don't even have a spiritual life. I said, I go to church on Sunday, but I wouldn't call that a spiritual life. And he started laughing, and he said, well, that's why I'm here. He said, you'll start Monday, won't you, at the library, trying to figure out about how I got here, won't you? And I said, yes, sir, I will. And that's from age 43 on, that's all I've done is read and try to figure out about the soul and where it goes when it dies, you know, and how it, what goes on.
So where does it go when it dies, according to what your dad says?
Oh, wonderful. Basically, most of our religions say the same thing. All a few of the denominations are different. Everybody goes to heaven when they die. Now, not all churches believe that. Some believe you stay in the grave until the great white judgment. You know, that there are a lot of different denominational beliefs. But the major religions basically say that you go to another place until you can take a body again. And what I've come to understand is that there are different levels that you go to. You know, the famous quote out of the Bible, in my Father's house are many mansions, you know. So they're talking about levels. So the people that are, you know, the Hitlers and the Idi Amins and people like that, they go in the astral plane, which is where the heaven is, on a very lower level. And the people that try to do, you know, very well and try to do well for their neighbors and follow the, you know, I guess I would say the example of Jesus or the example of God's teachings, they will go to a much higher level in heaven.
So would you say that the lower levels are what other people might call hell?
I think the very lowest is. I don't have any recollection. You know, we only have stories of people who had near-death experiences, and, you know, they told what they saw in some of the levels, you know, of heaven. But, I mean, I don't know. I would assume they call it the lower astral, the medium astral, and the upper astral plane. And so you just, the level of your consciousness is where you go.
So how long do we have to keep on this cycle? Because I'm thinking maybe it's brainwashing. If I didn't believe in reincarnation, then does that mean I don't have to come back because I don't believe it exists?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that the Bible, I mean, many, many books, not just the Bible, but many books about, you know, that were written about the earlier beliefs and everything, explained to us that reincarnation was taught in the Bible until they decided, when they put all the scrolls together, you know, they had over 250 scrolls, I think it was, submitted, and they could only choose, like, what, 30, how many books are in the Bible, 40-some? And so they left out some very important information. And the part of the information they left out was simply that we did reincarnate. And I think what throws people is some of the religions teach we come back as cows and we turn, you know, things like that. But that is not what the Bible was talking about. Okay. 66 books in the Bible.
72.
So they left out a lot of scrolls. And so the point is, I think people look at some of the ways they talk about reincarnation, that you come back as a cow or you come back as a snake or
right,
what
have
you, has turned them off to thinking that's hoo-hoo, you know, and that can't possibly be. But I think enough people have, well, there are 80,000 people that were interviewed in the United States when they had near-death experiences. And all of them, I won't say they said the same thing, but I will say they all talk to what we all could quote right now. You know, you go up the tunnel and you see the white light, and then somebody meets you on the other side. You know, some people call it God, Jesus, you know, whoever. And then you have some type of reconnection with your quote unquote family.
Well, and in the Bible, it does say that when Jesus was getting baptized by John, mm-hmm. that he says, oh, that Jesus says to John, yes. Hey, we have Elijah come again.
Yes.
I guess they missed a few.
Yes, 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 yes. And, we have ascended masters, and these are people that were born just like we are, but they got off the quote wheel of karma, if you will let me say something, you know, that's believed in the East. And then they are there in heaven to receive people and to help them, you know. So we know that we have people that have reincarnated down here over and over and over and over and over until they perfected themselves. And as they say in the East, they got off the wheel of karma.
I want to know, can we get off being good enough and not perfect?
You don't have to be perfect.
Well, yeah. You just said people had perfected themselves and they got off.
I mean, I want to know, can we
be good enough to get off?
Okay, perfected means that they have passed the requirements for ascension. The wonderful man wrote a book called... I'm embarrassed. I can't remember. Anyway, I'll think of it in a minute. And he's the only person I've ever read who was in quantum physics who finally gave me a number. And he said, when our body reaches 80 hertz, we are eligible for admission into heaven or ascension, whichever word you want to use. And that there were some things we had to do in order to reach that higher vibration. So you're asking me, when can we leave? One answer is when our body can vibrate at 80 hertz, gravity will not hold us here any longer.
Okay, so if you want to call in and get your question answered by this fabulous Pat Robertson Rice, the number is 888-627-6008. Again, 888-627-6008. Okay, so one of the ways is 80 hertz.
Well, that's how you can ascend according to quantum physics, okay? Gravity no longer will allow you to stay here. Your body will be so crystalline, you know, so perfectly changed.
Okay.
Just like you remember the famous story in the Bible about doubting Thomas. And when Jesus reappeared, he told Thomas, he said, put your hand here, but don't touch me. My perfected body is not ready yet.
Right.
You remember that?
Right.
Okay. So anyway, the other things that we are asked to do is to follow the Ten Commandments. And when we can live by that, when we can live trying to help our fellow man, the next requirement is that we balance the left and right hand side of our brain.
Oh, so that's like what Monroe Institute is teaching.
Exactly. And there's a wonderful course you can take on that, as you well know, taught by Ms. Chiffon Wyatt. And so that teaches you how to work out of both sides of your brain. And there's a very ugly phrase when they talk about men sometimes, and they'll say, well, they are nothing but male chauvinist pigs. That was a 70s phrase. Nobody would say that today. And what they were talking about is they were just totally left brain. And left brain people want to get the job done, don't care how they get it done, get the details, and all it is the end result. You know, and you can't live your life like that or you won't have any friends.
Right.
And then you don't want to go over here to the right side of your brain. Think about all of our artists who were so creative, and every one of them died with not a penny to their name because they didn't know how to do anything logical. You know, they were just way out here somewhere else. A lot of our famous artists were that way. And without benefactors, they wouldn't have made it. So you don't want to be over here so right brain that you don't have your feet on the ground and you don't have to know how to have a normal life. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So we have to balance the left and right hemispheres of our brain. And then we have to practice and understand, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Or as the golden rule says, you know, we're supposed to help our fellow man. And many, many books I read are talking about all of these earth changes and these weather patterns. And yes, that's news, but the point is, the most important news is when we see people helping each other. Their house has been blown down, and the neighbors whose houses were not damaged go over there and help them sift through it and find the pictures. They offer them a room to stay in. They bring food for the family. That's what how the world is helping us change. I'm not in favor of earth changes. Don't get me wrong. I lived in a hurricane area, so I know what they can do. But what I'm trying to say is, out of the worst tragedy, sometimes you can see the most beautiful things happening for people all over the world.
My dad used to say that before welfare, Medicaid, and all that came in, that would happen a lot more. Mm-hmm. And then the people switched and started depending on the government. Mm-hmm. So I have two questions for you. Mm-hmm. One, that 80 Hertz one, mm-hmm. could that have been out of the book Power versus Force
Thank
by
you.
David Hawkins?
I couldn't think of it, but yes.
Okay.
Power versus Force.
Power versus Force by David Hawkins.
By David. It's a fabulous book. And if you're scientifically inclined, you can read it. The chapter I needed was the chapter that said the soul, how the soul journeys through life, what the purpose of, you know, coming back to each life is. And he finally gave me the number. He finally told me where the normal human being had to raise his vibration in order to get out of here.
Now, because I'm curious and had to learn how to balance my right brain with my left brain, and had help from Monroe Institute, and that's why I became a certified trainer mm-hmm. from them. I thought it was fabulous what they taught. I want to know, how do you know when you've reached 80 hertz? Is there a little machine we took next to our skin? Or how would we know what our progress was? I mean, I would think that I would want to know what I am today, and then a couple of months from now, I'd want to know if I've improved. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I would go a little anal toward that going, oh,
yes,
I need
yes,
to be
yes.
doing this.
Well, unfortunately, I don't think there are but about four or five of those machines in the United States. And they are used for magnificent projects, you know, big things that the government's doing, that kind of thing. I think we have vibrational assessments on some of our technological. I don't know if you've ever been to a doctor and they hooked you up to a computer, but it had a special program. And the program measured your chakras and told you the vibratory content in your chakras. And it measured your a lot of things and your vibrational rate compared to certain things. I forget what that program's name
is. So the original program for that was developed by a scientist because he wanted to be able to keep track of the astronauts when they went on the moon.
Oh, wow.
And so the first name of that program was the SCIO machine.
That's exactly right.
And then it went from the SCIO machine is now called the Quantum QX. However, that was all based off Sherry Edwards' work. Now, guys, I'm only telling you this because Sherry Edwards has been a guest on my show a few times.
Oh, I read her books.
So Sherry Edwards is another incredible being. Aren't we all lucky to see who's in our lives? And
yes,
that we get
and
it?
The way they come into them, too, is yeah. interesting. All these synchronicities. Yes, ma'am.
So it's all based off Sherry Edwards' work. Now, Sherry was awarded the Scientist of the Year in, I believe it was 2002. Because of her work
yes.
developing this. And then the scientist for NASA who developed this claimed it as his.
Oh.
And then a few others claimed parts of her work as theirs. And the only reason I'm saying that is because Sherry is roughly 10 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And she has decided that she wants this work available. And you can go to her website, guys.
Wow.
At soundoptions.com. And you can literally plug in and have your voice analyzed because that's how she
yes,
does it.
Yes, yes, yes.
And you can find out a lot of things. And she's training people for like giveaway prices. So if you're interested in that, that's
well,
what
I'll
you do.
Tell you something else she can do, which I think I had one of those voice imprints done. And it tells you if there is a disease forming in your body. It
yes.
will let you know if cancer cells are irregular. It will let you know if you're having respiratory problems. Or it's amazing.
And you know what else it does besides letting you know? If you can get on one of those machines, it will literally send your body the proper vibration. And what it does is, let's say, for an example, that your disease is at 30, but at 50, that disease can't exist. It will raise your body up a little over 50 until that disease drops out, and then it'll take it back to where it is before the disease, you know, lived.
Yes, and that's what I found so astounding about those early SCIO machines. But we were talking about vibration.
Right.
And see, in order to kill or bombard or whatever word we want to use, a cancer cell that's just forming, you have to know the vibration to go above.
Yes.
So that's how you can tell when your body is at a certain vibrational level.
So, guys, we all need to get on Sherry's website and see what our megahertz or our hertz is so that we can know where we are and if we're progressing.
Nothing else have the voice imprint, which tells you, you know, her voice imprint will also, well, the SCIO machine's voice imprint will also tell you the biggest blocks you are having in your life and identify some of the patterns that are not serving you.
Yes.
And we could all do with that.
Yeah, and of course, that takes a really courageous person.
No, it doesn't. It takes a person who's ready to, you know, Einstein, everybody in the world knows this quote. He said, insanity was doing the same thing the same way over and over again and expecting a different result.
Correct.
So my workshop that's going to start in 2020 says, make 2020 the best year yet. And one of the first things we're going to do is identify the patterns that are blocking them.
That is marvelous.
And do something about it and get rid of toxic relationships. You know, that's another big one. We're taught to be polite and kind, and that's not necessarily true when it's dragging our health down.
So Einstein also said that everybody's a genius. So why would one of the smartest men in the world say everybody's a genius if that's not the case, right?
We have the potential, don't we?
Or in some area, we are a
genius. We are. People are street smart. People are math smart. People are, you know,
Spirit smart.
Some people are
personality
artistic,
smart.
Dance, personality. Well, I think we all could be more than we, if we work at it.
If we didn't have blocks in our way.
If we didn't have these blocks in our way. That's exactly right.
So that's what I'm thinking. If you're going to quote Einstein and talk to us about these blocks that are in our way, well, he also said that about the genius. So if we can get the blocks out of the way, then we can find that
then
genius
piece
of us.
Then the part of us can open that's been just held back. You know, and the problem is most people don't understand. We have blocks. Well, I think they do understand it at Christmas. I mean, this season made me think of it. A lot of my clients say, Pat, I dread going home at Christmas. I just dread it because all the family is there and inevitably the siblings will get in a fight. We will start joking each other or insulting each other about childhood things. And I said, oh, my Lord, do you not realize that you have childhood hurts that you have stuffed down and that are holding you back as well as hurts from your marriage or hurts from your job or... And they say, well, no, I don't ever think about those. And I said, well, how does it come bubbling out at Christmas then?
And why does it bother
you? Where did it come from? And why did it bother you? And you called me crying from Chattanooga, Tennessee, you know, in the bathroom with the door shut because you don't know what to do. The family's just had a huge fight. You know, so we have childhood things we have to get out that we have stuffed so far down, we don't even know they're there until it explodes.
You know, that causes me to remember that when we were all in San Diego, California, for my dad's 70th birthday party, it was the first time since my kids were knee-high to a grasshopper that they had seen all four of my sisters and I together.
Wow.
And when he had turned 70. And it's because we never lived in San Diego. We lived everywhere else.
All geographically spread out now.
Yeah. And what my children said was, they said, we were fascinated, even though we were out by the pool and you guys were all in the kitchen getting meals ready for us, we were fascinated by watching y'all's interchanges.
Mm-hmm.
and how you all treat each other, because we've seen you with one sister, possibly two at a time, but never three or four. You know, it just doesn't happen. And so they said, and what we found is that everybody was nitpicking on each other and making little snide comments. And I said, if that's what you were listening to, did you also notice that your mother never did that? Did you notice that your mom doesn't participate when that happens? And they looked, and then they started thinking about the conversation that they heard and whatnot, and they were just amazed. They went, you're right, you didn't. But I thought, you didn't notice till I pointed that out. Right. And I said, kiddos, it takes two. If you don't play along, it doesn't happen. And if they pick on you and you don't respond, they don't get their jollies out of that, and then they go on to somebody else.
That's exactly right. If you just don't engage, they say many times. Just don't engage in it.
So there's this thing that I've noticed lately, and it's Sherry Onshara's term, and it is literally the non-emotional observer.
Yes.
And she says that when we have those hurts and when we have those pains, if we can step back and we can observe and we cannot get emotionally involved and just observe, the non-emotional observer, she says nothing lands in the body, and then you're not tied to it, and then you don't get the aches and pains later that go along with it. You know, and since I heard her say that, I really started thinking. The other thing she said was that there's such a difference between emotions and feelings.
Wow. And now I want to hear this.
Emotions bring up the past, which is supposed to stay in the past, and it's supposed to have passed us by already.
Wow.
And that feelings are present. And feelings are present and short-term, and they're there, and then they're gone. But when we grab on and try to hold them, and therefore we're turning them into an emotion, then we get on this hamster wheel, and then it drags us down. Mm-hmm. And she says, in actuality, there is no energy behind an emotion other than what you give it. So if you can change from the hamster wheel, notice a feeling and let it go, then we won't have emotions. And feelings are great, but we don't have emotions, so we're not holding ourselves in our past.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I like to give credit where I get the ideas.
Yeah, that's
so
very interesting. I had never thought about a difference in an emotion and a feeling, but it makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
It did. That's why I grabbed onto it when she said that. I was like the same thing. Well, wait a minute. My head hasn't gone there. So now let me think about it.
Well, one of the ways I first started out was to go and get licensed in hypnotherapy. And I began to work with people who would come in and say, well, I got fired from another job. I'd like to see what's going on with me. Or I've had a dream, you know, three times in a row, and I'd like to see what that is. And so you would, of course, hypnotize them and take them back. And what I found out, it was never one thing. It was usually three things tied together.
Oh,
so
isn't that
they
interesting?
Were embarrassed at school in the sixth grade. And then they were embarrassed at high school at a certain time. And then they went on their first job and they were embarrassed. So you couldn't just look at one isolated incident. Like you might say, well, you said you got fired. What in recently in your life has happened with maybe a friend? I mean, is there a commonality? I found out that when the person was under hypnosis, they would usually go to a series of things. It wasn't just one thing. So I can see her point about emotions are in the past, but unfortunately, it hurt you when it happened at three. Then you added more emotion to it when it happened at 17. And then you added more emotion to it when it happened at 24. And so now you have lost a job over it. So I'm adding on to what she said, emotions are in the past. And I didn't use that terminology, but I never realized that every really horrible thing. Now, that's not a correct statement. When we have these life patterns, it usually goes way back to the first incident in childhood, and then maybe, you know, in high school, and then another one at another time, and another one in a marriage. It's never one thing. it's usually tied to a series of things.
Right. And it's good to, that's a good thing to point out, is that it's, you got to look for where the pattern is.
Where the pattern comes from. And it starts early and it builds and builds until somebody says some innocuous comment and you explode.
And they're always innocuous comments. It's like, okay, I didn't mean anything by that. That was just an innocent little statement. And have you noticed that they always explode at the people that are the safest to explode at?
Oh, of course.
So the nicest people get exploded at more than the others?
Well, I don't think I would pick on, somebody 7 feet tall, 300 pounds that was a boxer to discuss my unhappiness, would you? I think I might pick somebody at least my size.
Okay, so the reason I'm bringing this up is, how many of us have children that for whatever reason, instead of recognizing their own choices, their own reactions, their own emotional garbage, instead it is safer to blame the parent and then not talk with the parent or alienate the parent who, God bless us, we brought you in this world as parents did, and we dedicated a whole huge part and portion of our life to making sure that you were loved and you had food and you had clothes and you were supported and whatnot. And I know everybody didn't have a perfect childhood. But
I've never met anybody who did.
No, me neither. But the fact that you had somebody willing to take you on, did the best that they could with what they knew and where their own stuff was, and then to alienate that person because it's the safest person to blame instead of taking responsibility for your own choices. And I say it's okay to blame till you're 21. And after 21, you don't get to blame anymore. You're now a legal adult. You got to take on your own stuff.
Well, if you look at my practice, most of the people that finally get around to really looking at themselves are in their 40s or 50s. Unless they've had a horrible, you know, something to happen to them. Because at 40, most people can afford to go and do some self-work. You know what I mean? They can afford to go have massage, or they can afford to have acupuncture, or they can afford to go talk to a therapist or whatever. But when they're 50, and many of them are looking toward retirement, or they've been to through a marriage and a divorce and then another marriage that's not working out, and the kids are now having their own problems, and that's when I think people have to start looking at themselves. I don't know that we look at ourselves in our 30s because we have sleep deprivation. We're raising kids. We're having we work two jobs sometimes. And I mean, come on, we don't have a prayer sometimes until we're in our 40s. But I'm not disagreeing with you. I think children maybe don't. Okay, you're a child for a while and then you're an adult and then you're sitting in the therapist talking about how your child did something, you know. So I think maybe when your children start doing things, then you begin to think about, whoa, where did I make the mistake, you know, or where did mine start, or what do I wish I could do differently, or what have you. But it is, I mean, it's a constant thing, you know, with parents in their 50s trying to talk about, where did I go wrong? My children don't even call me anymore. You know, my children are angry with me, or they don't want me to talk to them, just text them once a week, you know, that kind of thing.
You know, speaking of texts, I look at those texts and I think they have no intonation in that text. You can't tell if that's an angry text, if that's a pleasant text, if that text is joking. You know, you can't tell. So I look at texts and I go, unless you're simply telling me I'm going to be late, there's been a change of plans, call me, something really fast and quick, do not write more than 3 sentences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I have had people say that the people got mad at them, you know, when they got that text, because they thought they were kidding and they weren't, or they were kidding and they were, and they, you know,
yeah,
you cannot, you're right. You cannot read the emotion behind the text.
No. And
that's how everybody kind of wants to communicate today.
Right. And I think that's dangerous.
Oh yeah. How is that going to help you on a job interview?
Yeah, well, I'll never forget when I came home from living in China, and I got home, I got a house and whatnot, and both of my kids happened to be in Texas at the same time when I was living in Texas, and they came over for dinner. And shortly after I served everything on the table, we filled our plates, my son got a text. Now, I have to say they were in their 30s when this happened. And so, anyway, my son got a text and he got out that phone. He started typing away, whatever. And I told my daughter, I said, we're not talking. We're waiting. That text must be so important that it has to take time away from us in person. I said, we'll wait till he's done. We put down our forks and we just stared at him and waited. And he looked at us and he looked at that. And I said, it must be really important when you haven't seen me for over a year and you've got both your sister and me here at the same time, which is rarer than ever.
Yeah, yeah.
And that text is drawing your attention. We know it's got to be crucial. Something's really going on with somebody that you care about. And he just looked at us and that went away. And you know, my kids have never pulled out a phone at my dinner table again.
Wow.
They never have. They know that I'm going to go, wait, that has to be awfully important if it's more important than those people that are here with you.
Wow. Well, you talk about action speaking louder than words there. I mean, I know you had words, but I'm saying you drew the line in the dirt there and said that, I'm sorry, I spent all day cooking this food and I'm just not. Well, the strange thing to me is you go to a restaurant, there'll be a table of a whole bunch of people out for the evening for dinner.
And they're all on their phones.
They're all on their phones.
So why did they bother to get together?
That's not meant as a criticism to anybody out there. It's just meant as something I've observed. And I thought that's strange to me that everybody would go out together, but they would all be talking to other people on the phone.
Well, and what I find, too, is that a lot of times if you look at those phones, they're not talking to other people on the phones. They're all on a mutual game and they're all different players on that game. And that's why they're not talking, because they're all playing and then they make a comment once in a while like, oh, my guy got your guy.
They're playing the same game at the same table.
At the same table.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And they're, well, not everybody does
that.
But I watch my kids' generation, you know, the millennials that everybody goes, and looks twice. And I'll watch, and they're all playing the same game with each other, but their character is on that phone. It's like a portable game.
Well, for heaven's sake, I never thought of it. I just observed the phenomenon, and I thought it was odd, you know. And I see it a lot. I mean, it's not like I just saw it one time.
Right. Well, and I started seeing it, and I went, okay, guys, what's up?
So you went over and investigated, didn't you?
Of course.
To see what it was.
Even to strangers at their table. Hi, guys, it looks like you're all on the phones. I want to know what's so important over here. Am I missing out on something?
And did they laugh?
Oh, yeah, they
laugh. Or look at you funny?
Oh, no, they laugh. They laugh, and then I just play stupid. You know, and everybody's helpful when you play stupid.
Oh,
have you ever noticed that everybody wants to help you when you don't know something? So I have learned a fabulous technique of talking to strangers is play stupid first, and then they get helpful, and then you ask a few more questions, and then they realize you're not so stupid, and then we can have a real conversation. But the ice is broken.
Yes. Yes, I totally agree. Everybody, that's a wonderful way if you have a good example would be a husband and wife. And, you know, 24/7, there are bound to be some things that come up. So when I have clients that want to talk about, oh, my God, my husband's driving me crazy or my wife's driving me crazy or whatever, and I'll say, you know what, here's the deal. You need to just be respectful. And you need to say, Jane, do you think sometime this weekend that we could have about 15 minutes, I need some help. End of what you say. And I need some help. And Jane will say, well, you know, we've got that so-and-so. We've got to go to the ball game. So, well, you know, Sunday, and you say, okay, great. At 4 o'clock, let's get in the car and we'll go get some ice cream or something. I really need some help. And so Jane's going to clear the path because she's curious about what this husband that has been so antagonistic to her, or she has been to him, whichever way it goes, you know. So you get in the car, and the secret is you don't do it at home. You get on neutral territory. You don't bring this up at home. And so you go get your ice cream, sitting at the table, and you say, this is what I needed your help with. There's a Ericksonian language patterning. If you all want to read it, it's fabulous. And you never say you. You don't ever accuse anybody. You say, so the husband says, Jane, I am really having a problem here in understanding why you are letting our child, who is 15, date a boy who's 17. He's much too old for her. And I would like to ask you if you would really think about that. And Monday afternoon, when I come home from work, could you give me the three reasons that you think that's appropriate and how you think that's going to help her for this boy to be that much more knowledgeable about social life than she is at this tender young age? And she'll say, well, so-and-so. And you said, no, I really want you to think about it. And let's take our ice cream and go back to the car now. And you don't engage. You don't engage. You throw the fish hook out there, but you don't engage. And then by Monday, when you come home, when the guy comes home from work, he said, is it convenient? You know, you don't
just blurt it out.
You don't just blurt it out. You say, is it convenient? Or is it okay for me to hear? I'm really anxious to hear what you have to say. And what happens 9 times out of 10 is they might say two things, but they'll always have something in there like say, well, it may not be a good idea. He's probably more knowledgeable than she is, or maybe these older people he goes around with, it wouldn't do for her. And usually you can go in the door that way, but you can't do it at home. I mean, you have to get on neutral ground. You have to just make sure you say, I'm having a problem with what's being done, who she's being allowed to date. And I would like to hear why that's being allowed. And then you leave. You don't engage. You don't engage. That's the secret. You
that
don't
is the
engage.
Secret. I knew one couple that I'm listening to you, Pat, and I knew one couple that would never argue in the house because they didn't want that energy going into any of the furniture.
The furniture, I'd be more concerned about the children.
they didn't want it going into the furniture because they didn't want it coming back at them.
Okay.
So they would literally go argue outside.
Oh, my Lord.
And so it was cold. It was so hot. They were sweating.
Uh-huh.
Or it was so cold at different times. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't that many times of the year that the weather was nice outside.
You're right.
And they said they had very short arguments that way.
And there may be a lot of logic to that one, too.
So what you're saying reminds me of when that couple came in to get their names read together. And I said, you know, you guys have been
married. Wait a minute. A couple came together?
Oh, yeah, I get couples together.
Oh,
to come
my
in,
gosh.
And then they want to know how to improve their relationship based on comparison of the names.
Isn't that fabulous?
Yes.
Wow.
And
are they ever surprised by what you say about the other spouse?
Well, they acknowledge it.
Oh,
and they usually say, you know, we've been talking about this lately, or this has come up, or whatever. The very last couple that did that, the very last one, because that's only the ones on my brain. The rest I always forget about. Sorry, no offense, anybody, but it's your stuff, not my stuff, so I forget. Anyway, so the very last one that came in, they didn't tell me anything about it. They just said, okay, here's our names, and we're curious what you see. And I said,
now, how old were these people?
Well, that's what I asked them right away. I said, well, I just need to know how old you are so I can see where in your name you are.
Right.
Okay. So they were in their early 40s.
Well, that's a good time to start
42.
looking, experiencing.
Okay. So it was so cute. They said, we don't want to tell you anything. We just want to hear what you have to say because we heard about you. So I went in there and I said, well, it looks like you went through this age of passion and this age of whatnot. And I said, it looks to me like right now there'd be some problems because you've let the passion go and now you're roommates. And I'm not even sure you're friends and roommates.
I'm sure you get along anymore.
It looked like they were, they got along, but they, in their names. And I said, but all the passion's gone, all the fun's gone. It's like, help me with this or you help me with that. And we're roommates.
Yeah.
And I said, and roommates don't work very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, so I went through and I said, so this is what this one did that caused you to consider them a roommate. And this is what's in this one's name that over time caused them to be considered a roommate. And so I said, and there's ways of fixing it because that's in your name too. Are you interested?
Oh, so the positive and the negative show up in a name.
The
attributes and then the challenges.
The solutions is
solutions.
How I look at it.
I didn't know solutions would be in there.
Yeah. So I said, so this is what would be occurring. And it would, and I said, but there's a few things that need to take place according to your names. And I looked at him and I said, he's not going anywhere. And I looked at her and I said, this whole relationship, whether it works or doesn't work, is up to you. because he's not going anywhere.
Oh,
I said, in his name, looking for at his name for your name, you're the perfect guy, perfect lady for him. So he's not going anywhere. He's just waiting for you to make a decision. What do you want to do with roommate status? And I said, would you say that's accurate? And the guy just shakes his head.
Oh, my gosh. He didn't deny it.
He didn't deny it. He just shook his head. And he said, and then he says, you're right. I love her. I'm not going anywhere. And then I said, well, here's where she's going to need you to change and adapt.
Oh,
I said, if you really want to bring some passion in, this is what needs to change to get you out of roommate status. Mm-hmm. And I said, are you willing to do those things? And he said, yes. You know, they're always doable. Right. And then I said to her, I said, you have five things,
five
that you that are here that need to be willing to be changed, you know, and they're minor. I mean, they're small things, but there's five. And so I went through the five and I said, are you willing to do those? And she says, but not number four. I'm willing to do the other ones.
Right in front of him. She said, which one it was?
Yeah. She says, I'm not willing to do number four.
Open, weren't they?
And so. So after the whole session was over and we talked about what it would take and whatnot, then they looked at me, the whole thing's over. And they said, you know, we're living in separate houses. We've separated.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
We don't know whether to divorce or what to do. And we've already separated. And I said, well, here's a way for you to, I said, when I look at the names, there's a lot of compatibility. There's a lot of love. I said, and if you know what, if 51% of this person's okay, why don't you keep them? Because you have no idea how hard it is to find somebody else that has 51% for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to want to live by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd rather have the companionship.
Mm-hmm.
So let's work out the other 49. And it's not even 49 when I'm looking at you guys. And they admitted, both of them, that says, well, we do love each other. We're just bored. And I said, well, then let's take these solutions in here and let's put them in a, you know, and one of the things that I suggested to them was to put down all their favorite things to do,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and put each one on a different card,
mm-hmm,
a small card, fold it up in half and throw it in a fishbowl.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one would do it too. And I said, and every Thursday night, you know that you're going to come straight home from work, that it's one of you guys is going to grab out of that fishbowl. And that's what you're going to go do that night.
So you're going bowling.
You're going bowling with me, or you're going to the romantic movies with me, or you're, you know, whatever, but you're going to do it together and you both put down what you love to do. So eventually you'll both do both of it and you'll reconnect and you'll have a date and you'll have something to look forward to,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and you'll be talking and sharing,
mm-hmm,
you know, and it'll start the, oh, I have a date this Thursday. Oh, I wonder where we're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how to dress. I wonder how to,
mm-hmm, something
know.
To anticipate.
Yes.
The same old boring myth.
Right. Mm-hmm. And something to put the life back in. Anyway, I gave him a whole bunch of those things to do. So anyway, there, that was not
you,
that
is
long
there a
ago.
P yet? Oh, I was going to say, had
no,
you heard
not
from
that,
him yet?
Not that long ago now. So it's anyway. So I told him, I said, and then you got to let me know how it goes.
Well, do all of your viewers know about what you can do with names?
Oh yes. Because on the first Thursday of every month, I don't have a guest. I just do names.
Oh
yeah. And then one of my, Amy, if you're out there, Serena, I can hear you just say of what I just said that, you know, I just do the names and you're going, it's not just a just. There's a lot in those names. So thank you, Amy. I heard you in my head.
Well, you know, I wonder when parents are naming their children, sometimes I doubt seriously if they understand how serious a name can be.
And how important
a name can be.
Well,
so I hope that guardian angel is whispering very hard which family name to put in there or what name in the baby book they think is pretty. Or
when there were still only seven religions on the planet, this,
mm-hmm,
is according to Dr. Eugene Whitworth's work, and his best book out of the ones I've read, everything he's written, is Nine Faces of Christ.
Oh, I'm reading that now.
I love his stuff. Anyway, according to his research, he said when there were still only seven religions on the planet, they all understood 10 basic ideas. And one of them was that the incoming soul impresses upon the person that's going to be naming them what they want to be called. So we name ourselves.
You're kidding me.
No. And all the religions understood that.
So they were open to guidance, I guess we would call it, or a dream they had with a name in it or something.
Right. You know? And all the stories I've heard from around the world, between the dreams, between the movie star, and you got this feeling, between a child that the mother fell asleep at the beach and they were watching that child and fell in love with the child while they were watching them, didn't want to interfere and scare the child, but wanted to make sure that that little girl wasn't going to go into the ocean, mm-hmm. you know, and drown herself mm-hmm. while mama was obviously exhausted, because mm-hmm. otherwise she wouldn't have fallen asleep with her child at the beach mm-hmm. and on the water
right.
and stuff. And then to find out the name of the child.
Yeah.
And then to have the whole body, you know, vibrate.
Yes, like that. Mm-hmm.
And to go, oh, that'll be the name of mine. Mm-hmm. Thank you for having this experience mm-hmm. to get me mm-hmm. that type of thing. But the stories are amazing. So some are conscious of how they're told and others aren't. Okay, so before we run out of time, though, Pat, mm-hmm. I would like to, I've been trying to think of a question the whole time. I would like to be able to show or have people hear how you work, because I know you're marvelous. And guys, my stamp of approval ought to be enough, because you know how well I vet everybody before they come on here. And for me to tell you that she's now a friend and I have kept using the services. When the lightning hit my tree, I literally sat. And I got quiet and I literally said, I'm going to need help with this to figure out why or how or what needs to happen next. And who should I call? And you guys know, I know an incredible number of people that are so very gifted and talented. And Pat is the one I called. So
I work with people's guides and angels. And so when you've had a lot of clients, you sometimes people have similar experiences. But I can say that nobody's ever called me when lightning struck a tree and knocked their roof off. You know, and what do I need to do now? You know, no one has ever given me that experience to fall back on. So I just I knew she needed to be calmed down, because her voice was it was not her own. I knew she was upset. And so I simply just tuned in to her guides and angels, and I said, I'd like to send some calming energy, and I'd like to see what we need to do right now. And so her angel said, besides needing calming down, that we needed to clear the property of the shock of that lightning, and we needed to go through the house and make sure that there was nothing that could catch on fire, you know, to make the house safe. And right. So I don't know how many of you believe in angels out there, but angels are, they're just hordes and hordes and realms and realms of angels just waiting to help us. And there are angels, there are 9 phylum of angels, or 9 different categories of angels. And so I just called on her angels and guides and my angels and guides to clear her property. To me, that shock was, you know, and that electrical energy off of lightning we don't deal with on land every day. So I wanted her land to be safe, and I wanted her house to be safe. And so that's what we worked on. We worked on clearing the land and clearing the any energy that was, what shall we say, frightening, or any energy, you know, make sure.
Shocking.
And then we worked on her. So I basically, the answer is, I just basically work with angels and guides, you know, and it was important to me for her to be calm enough to go around and make some rational decisions, like unplugging appliances, you know, and things like that. Right. And so angels are very, I don't know. Everybody should find out who's around them. You know, you ought to call on your guard. Everybody has a guardian angel, and you ought to call on them. So I think all we basically did was just calm her down and make sure her property was safe, and that there was no danger anymore from that electrical circuits. And then she had enough sense to go through her house, you know, and disconnect everything. She was really very calm and courageous for somebody whose roof had just been knocked out from a, from 7 feet away out in front of where they were sitting, you know. But, you know, the angels know more than we do. Let's put it that way.
Well, Pat, I want to thank you so much for being on Know the Name, Know the Answers.
Oh, I enjoyed it. I'm happy I happened to be here tonight, so you have somebody to chat with.
And my apologies again, guys. I really did think I was going to have a business lawyer on, so I know many of you would have been on here to call in and ask Pat a question, but you thought it was going to be a business lawyer talk. So For that, I apologize. We'll have to have Pat back again, because truly what she gets from her angels and guides and your angels and guides is just amazing. So thank you. Have a great week, and we'll be back on next Thursday.
How would you like to be able to read other people's minds? Well, the next best thing is here. When you know how to read a person's name, you know how the person thinks, feels, and behaves. Each letter in our name holds a key to unlock our true essence. Our name contains both our gifts and challenges in this lifetime. Nemology science discovers personality secrets hidden in the placement of the letters of our names, including the first and last impression people remember about us. Sharon shows us how to interpret the arrangement of letters as outlined in her book, Know the Name, Know the Person. Sharon Lynn Wyeth created Nemology Science after 18 years of research and testing her theories, and has supported thousands of people around the world in understanding themselves and others better. You'll enjoy Sharon's unique teachings as she shares her system to learn the gifts behind your given birth name. Even if you don't like your birth name, there are jewels in this book. If you're thinking of changing your name, ready to name your child, or wanting to get along better with others, this is the book for you. If you'd like to improve your relationships and change your life for the better, get the book today, Know the Name, Know the Person, or visit www.knowthename.com. That's www.knowthename.com.